Blog Talk Radio.
In the midnight hour. Live call at number, area code 646-929-2066. Hit us up. You got a comment or question. Of course, as always, I'm Joan, also joined by my co-host, the one and only Billy Blade. Billy, what's up?
Nothing much. When push comes to shove, I'm the rock of love. Still rocking it out with my, never mind, out.
All right. And we are joined on the program, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to give a huge introduction because if I introduce everything, it would probably take the entire program. So let's go ahead and bring the man out. We'll be talking about a lot anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Vintage Pro Radio, Mr. Rick Bassman. Mr. Bassman, are you on?
Yeah. Hey, guys. How you doing? Hey, Billy.
Hey, Rick. How you doing, man?
All right, man, I got to tell you, my reaction to your whole Rock of Love spiel there was the same as your co-host. It was kind of like, yeah, but you'll have to explain that another time. So I think we all want to know what that meant, Billy.
Well, you know, when push comes to shove, I'm the Rock of Love. Brett Michaels,
yeah, I heard
Rock
that. I still
love.
Don't get it, but I'm a little slow these days, so that's all right.
Yeah, no problem, man. Hey, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, man, and Vendetta Pro Wrestling and everybody, thanks for coming around to the last couple shows. I mean, I think a lot of the people who actually listened to what you were saying backstage and in front of the fans, I honestly think that, you know, if it touched one person, you know, and they listened and understood what you went through and what you've done and what you've accomplished, then obviously what you did was, you know, was worth it, you know, so...
Yeah, I appreciate it. I very much appreciated being there and the extension of your hospitality. I was telling a friend not long ago, I haven't done an interview for probably, gosh, over a year now, not because I'm special or anything, but just because, I should say I don't do interviews. That's what I mean by saying I'm not special. It's just that you've been so cool to me, and we're here in the same neighborhood now, if you will, that I thought it would be... you know, the right thing and a cool thing to come on and do. In return. I appreciate it.
No, we appreciate it, man. Our radio show, we just took over to the radio show we had a couple other people that are hosting it, and now it's us. So I'm not a radio person. I wrestle. No, you know how that is. I figured I know a lot of facts about every one of my guests just by being in the industry for 15 years now. And obviously when I first started pro wrestling, I used to go to the Galaxy every time they had a show, and I remember these shows like it was yesterday. I mean, they were so memorable, and I can honestly say that there's a lot of SoCal fans out there that, you know, are now about 35, 40 years old, you know, that were both, they were all part of those as well. And, of course, we still use the Ballard Brothers, who are one of our big part of our shows, and they were like regulars there. I mean, I remember watching them wrestle the Hardy Boys and Roadkill and Danny Dorn for the ECW titles. I mean, the Legion of Doom. I mean, the list goes on and on. And
that was a good one. And I'm sure your fans know who you're talking about. But for those who don't, you're obviously alluding to our UPW or Ultimate Pro Wrestling shows. And the Galaxy was, for lack of a better term, a home theater. And for a you know, for a beat to shit place that sat just 600 people, that you know, I liked my recollection may be a little skewed, or I might be romanticizing this, but to me that was like a place in time that'll never be replicated again in this industry or elsewhere. I mean, there's a lot more successful promotions. There's obviously a lot much bigger shows, but you know, that backstage, that locker room, and that front of house, man, it was a special time. It really was.
Oh no, definitely, it was definitely a special time. I mean, if you go back to the talent, I mean, I have a feeling that this 45-minute interview is just not going to be enough. But maybe we can have you back on later, you know, in another time. But the thing about it is I was there young in my career, and I mean, you had the likes of Rob Van Dam. I mean, you had the top stars. I mean, I remember talking to you recently, and I remember Undertaker couldn't make it one show, so you end up replacing him with Triple H. I mean, how big is that? I mean, UPW was the place to be. You were a WWE developmental territory. In fact, I mean, John Cena is in WWE because of you, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Well, you know, I'm not going to – okay, let me give you a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, exactly.
There's one statistic I like to throw out there, and that Ultimate Pro Wrestling and our sister school, Ultimate University, over time sent 43 people, guys and girls, to WWF and then WWE. And what I mean by sent is Jim Ross was in charge of talent development back then, before the John Laurinaitis era. And it was very, very hands-on for me to package a person and present that person to JR and to Bruce Prichard, his second in command, and then guide the entire process through the contract or through the person being either staying with us for a while and redeveloping that person per their guidelines, or sending them to the knucklehead Cornette in Louisville or whatever it might be. So it was much, much different than someone getting signed to developmental than it is now. It was a long, drawn-out, hands-on process. And John Cena is, you know, in many ways just another number. He's one of those 43. I mean, he obviously wasn't going to become more than probably the other 42 put together. But so is John in WWE because of me? And this was a long answer to the short question. I definitely took him in. I saw the potential, but you would have been dumb not to see the potential. It wasn't like I was a genius recognizing a diamond in the rough. And I brought him through the process, so I delivered him up unto you know, Vince McMahon and the great gods of wrestling. But if I hadn't existed, if UPW hadn't existed, I'm sure John Cena still would have found his way there.
I agree. I mean, his passion back in the day, 15, you know, when I was going to shows, and I mean, I was actually wrestling then, or I think I was going through training. I can't remember. It's been a long time, but I mean, his passion for pro wrestling was huge then, you know, and so now, you know, it's even bigger now, of course, you know, and I mean, I think of people like Hardcore Kid, and I mean, Skulu, and I mean, there's so many people. I mean, John Heidenreich, Nathan. I used to train on the Sunday class when there was Tom Howard and Christopher Daniels and Nathan Jones and Heidenreich, and then we did the I think it was a mid pro camp earlier, you know. And but I mean, the thing about it is I wanted to ask one question, if that's cool. I mean, I read up, of course, we research as much as we can with our guests that are going to come on. You know, being that you're now local with us in the Central Coast, I read somewhere that you were the owner of the library in Isla Vista. Is that true?
Oh, God. Yeah. No one's going to know what you're talking about. But yeah,
actually, the Central Coast will, because the library was really popular back in the day. And being that it's the Central Coast and Isla Vista, I mean, Isla Vista is known for their Halloween, and they're known for their parties, you know. So I could just imagine,
God, yeah,
how
that's right,
crazy that was, you know.
Yeah, dude, I was a college student back at the time. I went to UCSD. I think my college career lasted about 3-4 months before I dropped out. And I dropped out at 20 years of age. And I'd done that because I started my first real business, and it took off very quick. Started an agency for local bands, which doesn't sound like much, but back then the local band scene was something to write home about. And in about a 3-4 month period of time. I had an office on in downtown Isla Vista on the main corner there. At four desks in this beat up old room. There were four of us just going nuts in there. We had about 100 bands we were taking care of and handled all their bookings from San Luis Obispo to Santa Barbara to Ventura, and ended up pretty much annexing that business. And then as adjunct to that, I was promoting concerts under the Bassman Productions name. How's that for an original name?
Well, yeah, but you know what? I mean, I heard that you had the Go-Go's. I heard you had the B-52s, the Clash. I mean, all these
people. Yeah, yeah. Back when New Wave was still actually a meaningful term and pretty much ran through all. Yeah, it's funny. When I was on hold before you guys picked up, there was some god-awful cover of Rebel Yell by Billy Idol. And and I hope that's like your pal's cover. I feel like an idiot if I just like threw someone under the bus.
Oh, no, no. Actually, but, we actually used Billy Idol's Rebel Yell, actually.
But
that's just a bad version of it just because.
Well, here's a good anecdote for you, and this will show you that you can talk about or ask anything you want. The first time I ever did heroin in my life was backstage at a Bassman Productions concert with Billy Idol. So there you go.
That's awesome. He's in L.A. tonight, by the way, performing.
Is he? Oh, that's
yeah,
awesome. I love
it. Yeah, two sold-out shows. I've never seen a concert since so one of the awesome.
It was a crazy, crazy wild guy, that's for sure. But anyway, I tend to meander a bit. The life, when I was in Santa Barbara, I had the band agency. I was promoting concerts. And a restaurant went out of business right downtown in Isla Vista. And I thought it'd be a good spot for Ivy's first ever nightclub. So I went in and leased the building and created the library. And it was something, man. It was a crazy, crazy time in my life, that's for sure.
What? I read also that, you know, when you moved to Colorado, right? And didn't you start being an agent for, like, the Arizona Cardinals?
Broncos? What happened real quickly? I'm sure your listeners want to probably hear about pro wrestling and whatnot, so I don't want to kill anybody off here, but real quickly, what happened in Santa Barbara over a 5-year period of time? This is being repetitive now, but I had the nightclub, I had the band agency, I was promoting concerts. My brother and I started a security guard company, which actually became the biggest piece of the puzzle. We had exclusive at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, at UC Santa Barbara, ended up doing about 200 nightclubs up and down Southern California, and ended up then opening a second club in downtown Santa Barbara. Ended up owning and running a modeling agency, somehow had my own limousine. It was just, you know, it was like a bad B movie out of the early and mid 80s. And it was like just the penultimate of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle. And I did burn myself out pretty hard after 5 years. And I took a quick venture, because I was a fan, or my first venture into the pro wrestling industry at that time, by creating, and I'm going to get to your Colorado question in a moment. I promise I never forget the question. It just takes a while to get to the answer sometimes. But what happened was I started, one of my first pro wrestling venture started this group, Power Team USA, and we all know that's where Sting and Warrior came from, of course. And my Santa Barbara businesses went south because I pretty much put it up my nose and do a needle and whatnot. And the wrestling thing didn't work out with Sting and Warrior. So my dad, who was, God love him, the nicest, dullest, most conservative guy on earth, sent me to Boulder, Colorado to get into his business, which was selling furniture, if you can imagine that. And that, you know, it was an ill-fated venture. Just, it wasn't for me. So when I was there, I quickly found out who the top agency was, went to work for them. They got shut down shortly after that, and I kept my clients, who at the time were the top players on the Broncos and the Broncos football team and the Nuggets basketball team, and it was very, very successful for me, and I ended up opening an office in Phoenix that replicated exactly the same thing with the Phoenix Suns and, as you said, with the Cardinals as well. So I had a very, very good run handling pro athletes in smaller town America.
That's awesome. And like I said, you know, we've had you backstage the last 2-3 shows, and we appreciate, you know, you being there as much as you can. The Central Coast is known for a lot of celebrities, so to speak. And I know that you're now based in Central Coast, at least for a little while. Central Coast of California, by the way, if people are listening worldwide, it's Santa Barbara, Santa Maria, you know, Paso Robles area. I also heard that you used to represent people like Tito Ortiz, and, you know, you had the Velour fighting in the MMA circuit. And I was curious, are you still friends with Lou Ferrigno? I heard, he's in the Central Coast recently, and I don't know if you've met up with him since you've been back to the Central Coast.
Well, Lou's wife, Carla, was up here this past weekend. Lou was out doing an appearance. And the reason I know that is, yeah, we're still friends. I talked to him about 3 hours ago because we're
oh, okay.
The way I, I think as you know, Bill, I'm living in the sprawling metropolis of Cayucos now, which for people that haven't heard of it, which are pretty much everyone, it's a tiny little beach town of 1,800 people. And I moved here a few months ago with my doggies to kind of recover from a hell of a year last year. But what I do here, other than spending a lot of time on the beach and chilling out with my dogs and doing my DDP yoga and whatnot, is to make my, to make my pennies to pay for the dog food and whatnot. I still handle guys like Tito Ortiz and Roddy Piper and Lou Ferrigno and Dallas Page and just take care of their movie and TV bookings and personal appearances and whatnot. So that's what I still do to this day.
Okay, awesome. And you know, we were going to ask, like, because Lou Ferrigno, I mean, I've been on shows at DDP, you know, especially I think you brought him in a couple times for UPW, I believe, and plus he works a lot of our companies that we work for regularly. The DDP, maybe I want to touch subject. I mean, I wanted to ask how your health is doing, because you seem like you're doing really, really well now, and I know you had some issues last year, and I think the fans would love to hear about how your recovery is going and like how DDP yoga has maybe helped you, because I know that that's helped a lot of people like Jake Roberts and Scott Hall, and he's actually getting an award at the Cauliflower Alley convention, which we run the shows for Mondays and Sundays and Mondays. So maybe you can touch bases with that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to ask you a question real quickly. When is Cauliflower Alley? It's coming up, yeah?
Yeah, we're going to – it's Sunday night, which is the show, April 12th, April 13th, which is Monday, April 14th, which is Tuesday, and April 15th, which is Wednesday. If there's a way to get out there, Rick, I mean, we have a lot of guys coming from your area. I'm sure you'd rather fly than drive, though, you know, but – we have a lot of people.
I like a good road trip. Throw my doggies in the car and away we go. That's all good. It's in Vegas, yeah, as always.
Yes, and what I'll do when we get off the phone, I'll get you all the information, and I'll talk to some of the people I know that run the Cauliflower Alley Club and see what I can do. And it's definitely well worth it. It's the 50th anniversary. I mean, Dusty Rhodes and Jake Roberts are giving DDP the award. Demolition
Tag Team
Award.
Around, I'll go. I would love to. I've only been once. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead, Billy. Sorry.
No worries. No, I was just asking about the whole how your recovery is going. We know, a lot of fans would like to know how you're doing, and I know you had some issues last year, and you looked real healthy when we seen you about a month ago. So,
I appreciate that. I guess it's all relative. It's been a bitch for sure, and it still is. I was in L.A. all day yesterday and the day before in 7 doctor's appointments and procedures and diagnostics and all that. And, the long and short of it, and I'll try to keep it on the shorter side, is I went in for a back surgery a year ago July, which should have been a routine back surgery, brought on by years of doing stupid things with giant guys when I'm all 5'4 and 135 pounds, but that's another part of the equation. So I went in for a back surgery. There were some screw-ups took place. I got infected very, very badly with what the doctors called imminently life-threatening infections. And at one point I was given a 2-month survival period. Ended up with 3 major back surgeries in a 3-month period of time. The third one, they put a ton of metal in my back to replace the bone that these infections had eaten away. And then I went on a hardcore antibiotic regime for half a year, a drug called vancomycin. And if you look it up, Wikipedia calls it the drug of last resort, which sounds a little ominous. It's only because nothing else is working on the infections. And at the end of that, my kidneys failed. And I went on emergency dialysis for a few weeks. They came back to life, which apparently in and of itself is something of a small miracle. So I finished all that a year ago now, but this whole ordeal is just, to be quite honest, and I don't want to get into a woe is me tale because that's not how I live. I don't really feel that way, but it's just been the gift that keeps on giving. And, I'm definitely not quote unquote recovered yet. I'm in my mind, at least, I'm a fraction of the me that used to be me. And I'd still like to think, I could get that back, but, I've got a somewhat of a long haul in front of me still. So I hope that answers your question. I mean, I'm not hobbling around. I don't look like I'm sick. At least I don't think I am. And I think outwardly you probably wouldn't know, but I know. I know what I was. I know what I am now. And I think I know what has to be done to get that back. The question is, can it be done? I don't know that yet.
Yeah, no, totally, yeah. But, I mean, like I said, I mean, you seem very good. You know, we appreciate you being there. You were at our shows the last two or three shows, and, you're in the Central Coast, so hopefully we'll bring you some more shows. March 27th, we're running actually at that same place you were at in December. And actually, Chris Masters is going to be back on the show. I'm sure. I know you always like seeing Chris and the Ballards and, a few other people. So
I love seeing Chris and the Ballards. I'm glad you're bringing them, and that's cool. It gives the fans something really good. Personally, I like to see them because they're three of the biggest walking, heat-seeking missile heat targets and rib targets are ours, so they're always fun to be around.
Well, speaking of ribs, okay, so you totally brought us to the next. Okay, our segment, we have a thing called Rib for Your Pleasure. So, on the show, if you can let us know the best rib you've ever pulled on somebody that you're able to talk about or that you heard about, and we call it Rib for Our Pleasure.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch, obviously, in all the years and all the travels, but one that stands out that I'll always love. Okay, let me qualify this first. How can I do this? I gotta do this the right way. Okay, I hope I'm going to ask anybody out there not to take offense to the following. You're going to know what I'm talking about because you've been in this business for a long time. In my mind, the people in our business are the least homophobic people I ever met. And I have to say that to qualify as a story I'm about to tell. There's always somebody in the locker room that gets all the gay heat just because it's fun to do. It's like, okay, let me draw a parallel. People used to tell short jokes about me all the time, and I get every rib about being short in the book. And it took me a while to figure out that the best way to deflect the heat and have the ribs go away was, not only do you not react to it, you actually give them back better than they gave you. You cap on yourself, they've got nowhere to go with it. Now, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about there. There's always someone in the locker room that gets that is kitted for being gay when they're not gay. Not that it's a bad thing to be gay, but it's a locker room thing. We had a guy, Dmitry Masarsky. His working name was Sean Riddick. Do you remember Dmitry?
Oh, yeah. I remember Sean Riddick, yes.
Okay. We used to always put the gay heat on Dmitry, and he was, to my knowledge, as straight as they come. And rather than go with it, he was very, very defensive about it, which just opened him to more. That's all. So
yeah, for sure.
I got him booked for 01 in Japan. We're at the airport, and we commandeered his carry-on bag when he was in the bathroom. And we placed some items in his carry-on bag, knowing that we would get dinged at the metal detectors. So we're going through the metal detectors. Sure enough, his bag got flagged. And they always say, well, whose bag is this? And someone has to raise their hand and then claim the bag. So Dmitry says, of course, oh, that's my bag. You can't imagine why his bag would be called into question. So they ask him to step over, and he does, and they open the bag, and they start to pull the items out. So out comes an issue of Blue Boy magazine. Most people probably don't know what that is, but that is the all-male version of Hustler magazine. And out comes a jar. Out comes the biggest black. I don't know what this show is rated. So I'll just say it. Biggest black dildo imaginable, a jar of KY jelly and a pair of fuzzy handcuffs. And and it was awesome. He freaked out. It was great. I mean, those aren't mine. All we should have done, really. But I mean, me, I would have laughed and said, oh, I thought I put those in my travel bag. I thought I packed that stuff. It would have been over. But he made such a scene about it and attracted so much. I've never seen anybody turn as red as I saw Dimitri turn that day. Anyway, that's probably a little more off color than you were looking for, but that's one of my favorites.
Oh no, that's exactly what we're looking for, really. Is your favorite ribs, and that's, I would hate to be him at that time, you know. But like you said, I mean, he kind of kept it going with the fact that he like, well, it's not mine. He could have just said it was his, and then that would have been done. But
exactly.
Hey, so anyway. Question. Speaking of 01, I know you had a big relationship with 01, and I know you sent a bunch of people to 01. Is there a number that you maybe remember on how many people you sent to 01? Because I know you actually wrestled a match, if I'm mistaken, within 01 with
Hashimoto. Yeah,
right?
I did. Yeah, I did one match with, I got to headline Corican Hall against Shinya Hashimoto. That's pretty fucking awesome. I never in a million years growing up thought I would do something like that, because I'm about as unextraordinary as a athlete or performer as they come. So that was an honor and a thrill, and every other superlative I could come up with. That was really something. As far as how many we sent over, that's something I never counted, but a barely accurate guesstimate would probably be 60, 70 people, as crazy as that sounds. It was pretty amazing. Developed a really good relationship right out of the gate with Hashimoto and his partner Nakamura, who was the business side of things. And when they first formed the company, they did a scouting trip across the U.S. And we were pretty good about putting on the whole dog and pony show when people like that came through. And as you remember, also we had the we had the ultimate monster factory in the industry. We had more physicality and more physical freaks than probably any other three or four schools in the country combined. So
people
would come in. It visually very impressive, and a lot of the guys could go. A lot of great personalities, a lot of great workers. Those big freaks, and I say that affectionately because they're all my friends. They were my friends, and most are to this day. But that was balanced out by the Frankie Kazarians and the Mikey Hendersons and the Chris Daniels and the Adam Pierces and the guys that could really go. So
yeah.
When Hashimoto and Nakamura dropped in, they were so blown away that they decided right on the spot they were going to work only with us to supply U.S. talent. And like I had with WWF before it became E, I had a lot of autonomy in who I got to present, who I got to send there. So, while they being Hashimoto and Nakamura would oftentimes make the selections, probably half the time they would say, okay, we need X amount of guys, send whoever you want. So it was a blessing. Got to, basically give out all expense paid trips to Japan to my buddies. But of course, I didn't do it based just on that. You'd reward people that deserved it, the little mates of the world. But of course,
little mates
to do the right thing. Yeah, but to do the right thing for business, you'd also, you'd make sure the person you sent that you were rewarding was also going to be somebody that would get over once they were there and have something of value to the company. And we ended up with a really good track record there.
Ladies and gentlemen,
By the way,
we got a little over
like
a minute left of our regular time. Actually, I just got the little thing now. We got 60 seconds left of our regular time. Hit us up on 646-929-2066. Or you can catch the rest of the conversation later. We will be posting this, of course, at VendettaProWrestling.com. And here in about just under a minute, we will be going into our bonus time period. So if you're listening online and you get cut off, you can catch the rest of it later on tonight. Or like I said, call in 646-929-2066. Get in quickly.
For sure. Hey, and so, Rick, yeah, I mean, 01, I mean, I remember all the stuff back in the day. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong. Wasn't Steve Corino part of the U.S. Booking of that, or was he?
Yeah,
he was definitely part of it, right?
He was. Yeah, he was. And while we were the sole provider in 01's beginnings, a year or two, 3 years in, whatever it was, they decided they wanted to start bringing some East Coast talent in as well. So Steve became very much part of 01 for that reason. And he started, as I was doing on the West Coast, he started to supply talent from the other side of the country.
Awesome, yeah, because I got the – I've only been on the ring with Steve once, and it was amazing. And the guy is just such an amazing talent. And, like, I remember, I think they were bringing ECW back. So, like, we had Sandman booked for an APW show. This is when I was working with All Pro Wrestling. And Sandman couldn't make it, so he called me. He's like, hey, man, WWE signed me. They're telling me, to do an autograph signing that day. So – and Steve stepped in for him. And Steve and me, I mean, we wrestled, like, 30, 40 minutes at the Bakersfield Dome. If you remember that place, NWA used to run there back in the 70s. And
there's a Men at Work Tommy Two-Toed show there back in the day. I remember it. So.
See? That's awesome. Yeah. It's now a church.
So is the flippin' Olympic Auditorium. How horrible is
I
that?
Know.
But
I know.
Anyway, go ahead. We digress.
Yeah, I don't get it. No, I mean, hold on. Okay, so, hey, so we're on bonus time. You know, we have about 15 minutes left. You have a book coming out. Is it out yet, or is it? Would you like to at least talk about that for a minute or two?
Well, sure. My book, it's my autobiography. It's called Little Big Man. The subtitle is How Many Chances at Life Can One Man Have? And the gimmick of the book, if you will, is it's written 8 chapters. Each chapter is metaphorically meant to represent a life. And I oftentimes feel like, well, when I wrote the book, I feel like I'd lived 8 lives already, and now I feel like I'm done with my 9. But each one is a standalone, like, part of life where I built some sort of mini-empire, lived the absolute high life you can live with each sort of mini-empire, whether it was the rock and roll business or the football business or the wrestling business. And then how I crashed and burned each one in spectacular fashion. And that was everything from stage 4 lung cancer to overdoing the cocaine and heroin use to ending up homeless with a bullet in my belly that I dug out myself. And, you know, it's like the roller coaster ride of life, all the ups and downs with all kinds of crazy stories interspersed throughout. The book should have been out over a year ago. And then I got sick again, and I couldn't have planned on that, and it kicked my ass. You know, I'm still kicking my ass, and I'm still coming out of it. So I am endeavoring to get the damn thing out this year, whether it kills, you know, if it kills me to get it out. That's my intention, and I want to be well positioned to promote it and get on the road for it and do all I can to give it a chance of being successful. And I still don't feel like I'm in the position to do that just yet. So the fact is I'm biding my time and just in doing my work and waiting for the right timing.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to having it. You know, I mean, having you around and as much as you can be around, obviously, and we'll promote it as much as we can on our end. You know, to hopefully help you out. And you know, obviously, the one thing that I keep striving about on this radio show, we've been doing it for the last 2-3 weeks. Together, me and Joseph, is like the respect, you know, issue in pro wrestling. You know, there's a lot of people nowadays forget about the respect, you know, came from and that. And then we, you know, you talked about it in the locker room a couple months ago, you know, and a lot of people forget about that, you know. And so we always try to stress about it and hope that maybe it gets to somebody, you know.
Well, dude, it's important. I mean, it's a hard business. And you know, God bless anyone that goes into it that actually treats it seriously, because as you know, they've probably unintentionally chosen a life of hardship and abuse for themselves. And I really think, you know, that's just inherent in the pro wrestling business. And that's a whole other subject, because we could go on and on forever about why the business is the way it is and what type of animal or human animal it is you have to be to even have a chance of making it in the business. But I think one of the things that mitigates all that hardship and all that ugliness is forming bonds with the people who are in it with you, forming bonds of mutual respect and admiration and support. And, you know, respect, which is a word you use, to me is a catch-all for all those things that are positive that can you know, hopefully beat down the negative aspects of this beautifully ugly business that we're in. So yeah, if you don't have it, if you don't have a mindset for it, if you don't have a heart for it, to be respectful, it's just the wrong business for you.
No, for sure. You know, and hey, Joseph, I know you've been on this line the whole time. If you have any questions for Rick Bassett?
Well, I'm actually perfectly fine with that. I mean, I'm sitting here basically just listening to the conversation, listening to the story. I mean, to me these conversations are far more interesting than the usual kind of scripted wrestling rah rah rah, I'm gonna kick your ass, you know, at the next show, stuff like that. I myself rather hear conversations like this. But talking about one of the things you got going on, the Global Pro Wrestling Mission. Bring some about that.
Well, you know, unfortunately, there's not much to say about it. Global Pro Wrestling is, or was, I should say, a company, a real LL, Limited Liability Corporation, that myself and Todd Kennelly and Luke Gallows formed to produce for big name, you know, ex-WWE, WWF star, big name pro wrestling in far-flung places that WWE had no desire to visit, and present pro wrestling in conjunction with doing, for lack of a better word, mission work while you're in country, visiting hospitals and orphanages and missions themselves, and speaking on behalf of, oftentimes on behalf of political bodies, to get across a message that was not political, but you know, for the good of the people. And you know, you hear this sort of thing, and you're probably like, well, what the hell does it have to do with pro wrestling? Until you realize that when you go to a country like Guyana in South America, where we went, or to the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa, where we went, where the only Western entertainer in the past 20 years that had been there was Cisco, the guy who did that awful thong song a million years ago. You go into a place like that and beyond blown away that anybody from the West is interested in coming to see them. So right away, you have all the mainstream media in your corner. You have the attention of, believe it or not, pretty much the entire population, because there's nothing else going on there other than, you know, hunger and poverty and struggle. And because of that, you have a captive audience. And if you really learn about the place where you're going, and you learn about the trials that they're facing, and you can align yourself with the right organization who's addressing those problems in a positive and proactive way, even though you're a bunch of giant white guys, or in my case, a small white guy, you can go in there and get something across and do some good in a very short period of time. So that was the exalted goal of the Global Pro Wrestling Mission.
You know, so speaking of that,
so whether
sorry,
not a problem. It's just basically the same thing. Whether you're bringing, whether you're putting smiles on the faces of a couple people here and there in California, or you're going to another country and basically uplifting an entire population, even if just for a day or two. You know, we were saying that about what does that have to do with pro wrestling. That's kind of the whole idea, is just going, you know, going to this place and that place and putting a smile on somebody's face.
Fair enough. Point given. Point taken.
Yeah, and Rick, you know, my girlfriend, you know, Kara Dillon, Monique Martin, you know, she
of course
told me to tell you hello. And she, you know, she was the first woman to wrestle a man in Lebanon couple years ago, and the country there, I mean,
that does not sound like a good idea, but okay.
I know. I mean, it was great, but you know what? They came out in thousands. I mean, it was amazing. And I'm not sure if what you're the global wrestling, is it the same story? I mean, we don't have enough time to go into it, but is it the same story when Luke Gallows and Cliff Compton got stuck? And I think Africa, or
no, that was in Nigeria, working for that knucklehead Power Udi, who's one of the biggest
crooks in the history of the pro wrestling
That's
industry.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. No. That was just a joke. No. Real quickly, we went to the Congo, and Kinshasa is the capital there. It's a population of 10 million. When we went, there was not a single stop sign or stoplight in the entire country. That's how back in the third world this nation is.
Wow.
And we got the first visit was me and Luke, strangely enough, Luke Gallows and Nathan Jones. We got to the airport. Now, look, Luke and Nathan in the pantheon of pro wrestling greats are hardly what you would call big stars. They're both great friends, and I respect the hell out of them. And then next to them, I'm a way smaller man. But the three of us get there, we had 10,000 people waiting at the airport for us. For me,
wow.
And Luke Gallows and Nathan Jones, if you could imagine that. You know, I have a photo of me being kissed by a banner and tiara wearing Miss Congo and being handed a bouquet of plastic roses. That's how different it is going to a place like that. Now, if you look at the Congo, you'll see that they have the unfortunate distinction of being known as the rape capital of the world. It's horrible,
oh, no.
horrible stuff happening over there. And we aligned with some of the most prominent anti-rape groups, not just in the country, but in the world, learned their message, learned how to impart it in as impactful a way as possible. And we went and we addressed some very, very influential groups about that. Three white guys from the U.S. who didn't know shit about that. Pardon my language, but I'm using it to make a point. And
yeah.
Went over there and were listened to and probably had some sort of influence just because we were pro wrestlers who wanted to go to the Congo. It's crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah, no, you know, I wrestled in Japan, you know, a few years ago, and the respect, you know, we go back to respecting, but, I mean, the fans, we end up visiting a home. It was like a special needs, you know, it was a whole group, you know. And, I mean, they were so appreciative of us being there as American wrestlers that, like, me and a couple other wrestlers that were from America, we're the only ones that got, like, these big bouquet of flowers. You know, and I'm like, wow, like, you know, me, I'm a nobody. And I'm like, wow, I'm getting flowers from these people. I mean, it was an amazing experience. And
yeah,
I can only imagine.
Yeah. You know, charity is an interesting thing, and it's good when anybody does charity for anything. But, you know, those of us who, you know, who have done it or do it, we absolutely get as much out of it, if not more, than those we're doing for. And it's really very gratifying, I think. You know, Guyana, we went there, we had a great time. We were shown the king's treatment all over town, not over town, all over country, I should say. Georgetown is the capital there. But the best time there is when me and Bill Goldberg and Gail Kim and a couple of others went to the big all-boys orphanage in Georgetown. And we were supposed to go for, I think, 45 minutes, and we ended up staying for, like, 3 hours and playing basketball and soccer with them and just chatting with the kids and groups and one-on-one. It's awesome. I mean, like, you know, you see how appreciative they are, but, you know, if we say we don't get as much out of them as they do, then we're lying, obviously. It's pretty cool.
Oh, for sure. For sure, yeah. I mean, I remember we were doing, like, a mat wrestling with the kids, you know, and, you know, of course, letting them beat us. And, I mean, it was an amazing time. I mean, like, it's something I'm always going to remember. And I'm sure that's, like you said, it's happened with you and everybody that you bring in. And, you know, we only have, like, I think a minute or two, right, Joseph? A minute or two left?
About a minute and a half left, yes.
Okay. Hey, Rick, do me a favor. Can you, you know, we can maybe do an interview down the line and whatnot. You know, like I said, March 27th, we're back in Santa Maria. March 7th, we're actually making our debut in Torrance. Brian Kendrick versus Little Cholo. You know both of them real well.
Oh, yeah.
That's our main event of the evening. Can you let the fans of Vendetta Pro Wrestling, Vendetta Pro Radio, know where they maybe, you know, be able to get a hold of you, keep up on you, and whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. Best place to get me is just www.rickbassman.com. And right on the homepage, I also have all the links to my various social media, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, whatnot. I check them all on a regular basis. So, yeah, if anybody wants to drop a note, that would be awesome. I'll always respond. And for people listening out there, keep supporting Billy Blade and Vendetta Pro Wrestling. And they're a class act. They're doing a really good job here on the Central Coast. and it's well worth your time and the low, incredibly low ticket price, I think, that Vendetta charges to go see the great show and product they're putting out there.